This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Now, on last week's Blue Moon podcast, we were discussing Manchester City's ability to bounce back from the disappointment of playing well, but going out of the Champions League to Real Madrid. If there were any questions about whether they were going to be affected in the run-in, I think we got our answers this week. It might not have been a classic performance against Chelsea, but it got the job done by hook or by crook. And then what could have been a tricky tie on the South Coast on Thursday turned into anything but. A comfortable 4-0 win at Brighton was the best tonic to any nerves that were being felt after Arsenal went back to the top of the table while City's attention was elsewhere. On today's show, we'll review both of those games, plus we'll look ahead to the next in a line of banana skins as City go to Nottingham Forest on Sunday. Matt Davis from Forest Focus will be on the programme later on. And on top of that, we're going to take a look at City's history of FA Cup replays, with the news this week that from next season, there'll be no more from the first round onwards. I'm David Mooney. With me this week, I've got two City fans. I'm joined by Richard Burns.
Hello, David.
And podcast debutant Cheech.
Ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy. Excellent Simpsons in to start with. Burns, you well?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. Good. How are you?
Good, I'm not too bad, thanks, not too bad. Cheech, welcome. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm happy to be here. It's been a good week all in all.
Yeah, not a bad week. I mean, we postponed last week as well, so you've managed to avoid the Real Madrid heartbreak, and you get in there with a nice 4-0 romp at Brighton. So it's a good one to join us with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll start though. Two Arsenal fans were filmed dancing in the stadium this week, so I just wondered, have either of you two been caught doing something embarrassing inside the stadium? Richard, I know you have, so I'm going to let you go first.
Disagree. I don't think it's embarrassing at all. I know what you're thinking of, and I'm really proud of it.
Excellent.
I was caught on camera at the Benjani debut derby, 82 minutes, 15 seconds, flipping the middle finger at the middle finger or the V's, that bit I don't actually remember now, probably the V's, at the gathered United fans. I had the great fortune of being at that game. And yeah, I was confident enough at 2-0 up at that stage to flip them the V's. I think I told this story recently. I did have a friend who was in Australia at the time, and it was the first game he'd been able to watch for ages. And a day or so after the game, I got a foul-mouthed message from him saying basically the first game he'd watched, and in the bar that he was watching in, my face came up dancing and celebrating, and that added to his dismay. Also, after the last time I told that story, he then messaged me again to say that he'd heard that I'd been telling stories about him on the podcast, because I know his wife's a City fan and listens to this. So hopefully this makes it back to him again. It'd be nice to be in touch with him before the derby final again.
Excellent, excellent. you were with your dad, weren't you, when you did that V flicking? So was this all right in the Burns household?
You heard my dad's wedding speech, Mooney, and you know that there's one context where he approves of me using foul language, and it's at City. He doesn't mind it too much.
Yeah, especially towards United.
And I was an adult. I was an adult at that point, so, you know, if... yeah, it's fine. It's all fine.
All fine. Yeah, keep telling yourself that. Cheech, anything you've been caught doing in the stadium that you shouldn't have been?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could think of for this... I mean, I guess it is embarrassing.
I mean, we're here for embarrassing stories, mate. Crack on.
No, I mean, not particularly. Well, we'll see. So, I mean, it was last season, I think. I wasn't caught on camera, but I was. So, I'm in the south stand lower, just behind the goal. Well, just next to the away fans. So, I think Haaland had a penalty, possibly on for his hat trick. I can't remember, because he used to score lots of hat tricks, didn't he?
Yeah, sure, those were the days. Yeah,
I know. We didn't know what we had. Anyway, I got my phone out to film it, and before he'd started his run up, my dad was just like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Do you know what? Yeah, fair enough." So I put my phone away. So that was the most embarrassing thing I think I've been caught doing in the stadium.
Yeah, and your dad has done exactly the right thing there. We don't film penalties, sorry.
No, he did. He did. Although, as I said, you know, if only I'd known, it could have been the last hat trick he scored.
Yeah, that's true. Right, well, let's talk about City from this week. Like every week, this episode of the Blue Moon podcast is sponsored by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. Make Green King your go-to destination for the season's final stretch. Why? For one, you can wash every televised City game down with delicious food and refreshing beverages. And with 900 sports pubs dotted around the UK, chances are you're within walking distance of your local Green King. Let's be honest, watching the football is way better with your friends and family, so get the squad together for every televised Premier League fixture in an atmosphere worth sharing. That includes the upcoming game with Nottingham Forest. If you're not going to the City Ground on Sunday, you can watch it with your mates in your local Green King. And don't forget to download the Green King Sports app to enjoy exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there is a game on. Cheech, to think I was worried about that Brighton game. Turned out really easy.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite relaxed beforehand. I feel quite relaxed all in all at the moment. I think we've generally... Well, we've not lost for a long time, have we? I think it's
like
easy
December
to
the 6th
kind of,
or something like that now.
Yeah, so it's... Although we've kind of, alongside that, maybe not hit the heights that we've hit previously, I think we have been pretty consistent. So yeah, I was quite relaxed. The Chelsea game, that was you know, we just had to get through that. But I was quite relaxed yesterday. Brighton are a funny team as well. I think I think the hype might have died down a little bit about Brighton and about De Zerbi, because it's not been quite as good this season, I don't think. So yeah, I was quite relaxed. I didn't think it'd be as comfortable as it was, 3-0 up at half time, but. Yeah, they just dispatched them, didn't they? It was quite simple in the end.
Yeah, so proper dispatching actually. That when you think about it, like in terms of like next, that was just a next performance. Richard, here's a stat for you: City are the fourth team to score 4 goals in 4 consecutive Premier League games. There you go.
That is a stat.
It is a stat.
United, it's impressive, isn't it?
United in 2000, City themselves in 2022, and then Arsenal in 2024 are the others. So I don't know if City are actually the fourth or still the third. I don't know.
They're the fourth. It's a different iteration of the team.
It's only 2 years ago.
No. They're the fourth team. Third club.
Fourth team.
Second club, fourth team.
No, third club. United, City, Arsenal.
Yeah, but City were the second to do it, so they were the second club.
Oh, yeah. Good point. This is a rabbit hole, wasn't it?
I don't think it is a good point, but yeah. I couldn't let it go.
Yeah, all right. But either way, is this more evidence now that City have hit their end of season mode, do you think?
Yeah, and it's so nice to be able to have a game, 6 games out from the end of the season in a really, really tight title race when the pressure is on, and to have it sewn up by half time, because you know no respectable team would throw away a 3-0 lead against an inferior opponent. So it was nice to feel the comfort of that. Obviously, scoring relatively early, and you even get that sense of like little bits of luck breaking your way. Like I mean, I know we'll touch on this.
Oh, we'll come to this. Yeah,
yeah. There were things that went in City's favour that were more by luck than by design on City's part, I think is fair to say. Like you say, we'll come to it. And so it just gives that, it's like a sense of security, isn't it? And it's nice to just to ease that pressure so early and like really in the business end of the season. And then that, I guess, it becomes a psychological thing that then rolls forward to the next game of you start to think maybe looking at some of the fixtures we've got, maybe we can do similar in those games because the players are clearly responding very, very well to the pressure. And for City, obviously that's experience-based, isn't it? They do this time and time again at the end of the season. So it's just such a good feeling to come out of that game with just completely unscathed and ready for the next one and keep that momentum sort of, keep it moving.
Yeah. Cheech, if there was any kind of anxiety from the Madrid game, it's weird to say that because against Madrid, they played really well and were unlucky to go out. And then the Chelsea game was an effect of that Madrid game because of just how knackered everybody was. But a result like that and then a performance like that could have knocked momentum. And it's kind of glad to know, I'm kind of glad to know that, you know, half an hour in, it just wasn't the case at all, was it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, it's funny to bring up Madrid because Madrid have that aura, don't they? And kind of have that weight of history on their side, which is kind of, it's at least twice now that we've fallen victim to that. But I think that's kind of what we're about in the Premier League to some extent. Obviously, maybe more recent history, but yeah, I think that's kind of the thing that has carried us through a lot of this season. I don't think it'd be too difficult to argue that Arsenal have been the better team at least this year, maybe not over the whole season, but definitely this year. But yeah, I think there's just something about us that seems to keep us going. Like the players, obviously we've lost some players, but still the players that are there are fine with this kind of pressure and this time of the season. They've done it plenty of times before. Obviously the manager's fine with it as well. He won't let the levels drop. Yeah, it does feel like it's all clicked perfectly. Obviously, especially last weekend, was it last weekend or the week before, with the way the other results fell, with Liverpool and Arsenal both losing, and that just kind of felt like the moment, and it really does feel like it's swung towards City now.
Are you confident Liverpool are out of it, given their midweek result?
Yeah, I think that's been... I remember Adam Monk on this podcast quite a while ago confidently saying, you know, that Liverpool definitely weren't winning the league. They're massively overachieving. And it took a lot longer than expected for that premonition to come true. But yeah, I think they look pretty finished. The way they got beat on in the derby during the week especially... they just don't look like there's any fight left in them at this point.
Yeah. Richard, for Arsenal, the other side of this is as well, I know a lot of Arsenal fans who were looking at that Brighton game for City on Thursday night going, this will be a test for them. And then for City to be 3-0 up after half an hour and just be walking through it. Like, it's kind of demoralising for everybody else to see where City are at as well.
Yeah, it is. And I think, again, like for City, you overlay with that the fact that they do this year on year. You know, there's numerous examples of City coming from difficult positions to win the league. And that's not just difficult positions on the sort of the home straight of the title running, but that's, you know, difficult positions right on the final day. You don't have to go back too far for the Villa game where we were 2-0 behind and still won it. I think anybody coming up, or anybody who's doing battle with City for the title at this stage of the season knows that they're going to have to be relentless. And of course, I'm sure we're all realistic enough to know that City could yet drop points, because you can always drop points. Like the teams that City lose to are often...
Crystal Palace and Tottenham.
yeah, exactly. Like it's often games that you either, you know, you wouldn't expect, or you've got that weird hex that Tottenham have at their stadium, which has hopefully been undone by the FA Cup win there this season. Like it's, but you know, not accounting for sort of freakish results, anybody doing battle with City at this stage of the season knows the mode that City go into. They thrive under this pressure, don't they? They get better with it. But to be fair, I think looking at Arsenal this year, their mentality is clearly, clearly much improved on the last couple of years. And I think City have to approach every game with the idea that to win the league, they have to win every game. Because that's the kind of form that Arsenal are showing as well.
Yeah, just keeping it on kind of like the general picture to start with as well, Richard. How important was it for you not to lose in the FA Cup after going out of the Champions League? It's like I said in the intro, it was like they got through by hook or by crook, and it was very much a performance of this performance doesn't matter. We just have to win the game.
Yeah, and I mean, this might be a nonsense thing to say, because I'd obviously rather have won the FA Cup semi-final more comfortably than we did. But I wonder if, like even in galvanising the players, I wonder if there's almost something to be said for winning in a game where they weren't particularly good and leaving it quite late on. And, you know, I guess what would have been quite an emotional game. You know, Pep talks about how much of a punch in the face the Madrid game had been. Players were talking about a difficult week. And I wonder if there's something to be said for really, really having to, one, dig in, but two, ride your luck a little bit as well, and sort of pick the momentum back up that way. And, you know, like I say, if we'd have won 6-0, I'd be saying how great it was that they just put it completely behind them and gone and battered Chelsea. But I do wonder sometimes if that sort of win over, triumph over adversity is sometimes more galvanizing than...
Yeah, makes you feel unbeatable. Yeah.
So I think it was huge. It was huge to not lose that game, to have that, I suppose, not just the league to focus on, but to be able to, like, have at the back of the mind, okay, we're still on for two trophies and the United game to sort of remain in form for. There's so much to credit that win and for why it's so important to this season, and not to have two back-to-back cup exits yeah. I think is huge.
Yeah, and Cheech, you think of previous FA Cup semi-finals. City have stayed in the Champions League and Guardiola's named a team that has still been strong but has been heavily rotated. You can kind of understand why for this one he went, look, lads, I know you're knackered, but just go out there one more time and just get the job done.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's kind of the other side of going out of the Champions League is it's two, possibly three less games to play anyway, isn't it, for the rest of the season, so... I think it made sense, and they left it all out there. It's one of those things that, I mean, Chelsea are such a strange side. They've generally played quite well against us three times this season, but, I mean, especially in the FA Cup, they carved us open quite a bit. I never once thought they were going to score. I know...
Really odd, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, obviously Palmer can put it in, can find the back of the net, but the rest of them, I mean, that Nicholas Jackson, I don't know if it's... Maybe it's not his fault. Is he... I don't think he was bought as a striker. Has ever played as a striker. I don't think he... They've obviously just decided that he's the answer as a striker for some reason. I'm not sure why. But yeah, they're just... Bizarre team. A very strange team.
Yeah. And Bernardo exercised the demons of the shootout in... you could see in the celebration that he was pleased for him getting the winning goal. And it's really weird because, like, of all the players, like, I feel like he doesn't have anything to exercise or apologise for. He's wanted to leave for about 10 years and is still here and still giving everything. So, like it's all right. It's fine. He doesn't need to apologise for anything, does he?
No, not at all. I must admit, and if this is the last season, I will miss it. There's nothing like Bernardo Silva wheeling away towards the corner flag to celebrate a goal. He's just, yeah, he's great. I will miss him if he does go. I mean, I don't think he's been quite as influential this season, but I think that's kind of in line with maybe a general drop off. Of a lot of players, which has kind of been covered ad nauseum. Obviously, we might end up winning a double still, so it's not the worst drop off in the world, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, he's one of the best players we've ever had, undoubtedly. And yeah, the level of commitment that he's shown when he's maybe not fully committed and you know, maybe he does want to be elsewhere. The performances he's put in for the last four, five, six seasons, whilst that's been kind of common knowledge, have been phenomenal, really. Yeah. And speak volumes.
Yeah, fair play to the lad. Before we move on from Chelsea, did either of you see Danny Baker's tweet around City and United getting to the final? He wrote that the final should be played abroad because, and I quote, very few football fans in England give two fucks who wins out of the two Manchester sides playing each other over and over and over again. Only the second time it's ever happened, Richard.
Yeah, on similar lines, and I won't name them because it's somebody that I like, and also they won't care in the slightest what I would have to say. A very, very popular football podcast with a very prominent member of that podcast recently.
This isn't me, is it?
No. Very, very popular football podcast.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. My mistake.
Recently said, sort of before the semi-finals, that nobody wants a Manchester Derby final. It's not interesting. And he couldn't even remember the details of last year's. And it's like, if you can't remember a game less than a year ago that had the fastest ever cup final goal in it, between, you know, I mean, the Manchester Derby is a big game, whichever way you slice it. That isn't on City or United. Like,
yeah.
That's,
it's probably on you. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And nor should you remember like every small detail of a game that you maybe have a passing interest in. But yeah, it's such a strange opinion. Like, because the flip side of it is, like, we all love an underdog story in the FA Cup, but there's a reason like Cardiff Portsmouth didn't catch the whole country's imagination. Like, people do actually like it when the big clubs play each other. You can sense the sort of the stakes of it. And I know that's probably a very big club fan opinion to have, but it is an interesting final.
Yeah. You are preaching to the converted here as well, though. We are all in the same boat. So that is one thing. before we move on from that, I do want to do one little thing.
It's time for a game of Manchester Derby FA Cup Finals. Higher or lower?
Now, This is a really, really simple game. We know that a Manchester Derby FA Cup final is only happening for the second time ever in 122 years. City became City in 1894. United became United in 1902. So we've only been able to play City versus United since then. The question here is simple. Has the thing that I'm going to give you happened more or less than twice since the year 1902? Okay? Richard, you're familiar with the format, so pick a number 1 to 6.
1.
Number 1. Okay. Has there been more or less than 2 total solar eclipses visible from somewhere on land in the British Isles?
More?
There have been more than 2. There have been 3. 1927, 1954 and 1999. There you go. Correct.
They were the years I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, bang on. So there have been more total solar eclipses than Manchester Derby FA Cup finals. Cheech, over to you. 2 to 6 available.
They warned me about this. Number four.
Okay. I'm after groups, not solo acts, groups, whose name begins with the letter V, topping the UK music charts. That includes anyone with the word the at the start, if the second word begins with V. Have there been more or less than them than there have been Manchester Derby FA Cup finals since 1902.
More.
There have been more, again. 3 of them. Wenger Boys, The Verve, and The Village People. There you go.
There we go, yeah. I thought there might have been even more than that, but no, obviously
just,
not.
Just the 3. 1-1 then. Richard, over to you.
6.
Number 6. Okay. Earthquakes in the UK measuring more than 6 on the Richter scale. Have there been more or less since 1902 than there have been Manchester Derby FA Cup finals?
Less.
There have been less. There's only been 1. It's the Dogger Bank earthquake in 1931. There you go. Who knew?
It's the one I was going to say again. I'm surprised you're not asking for the follow-up detail.
Yeah. 2-1. Over to you, Cheech. You have numbers 2, 3, or 5 available.
I'll go with number 2, please.
Number 2. Okay. Have there been more or less US presidents who have died whilst in office?
Whilst in office. Since
1902.
Whilst in office. I mean, I know Abe, but I think that might have been before 1902. Independence Day isn't real. So I don't know. I don't think he died. Does he die? That might be a spoiler, so we'll leave that one. I'm going to say less.
Oh, there's been more. 3 of the buggers, yeah.
Wow.
Warren G. Harding went with a heart attack in 1923. Franklin D. Roosevelt suffered a stroke in 1945. And JFK shot in 63.
Oh, of course, yeah.
There you go. Richard, you have the final choice, number 3 or number 5?
Number 3, please.
Number 3, okay. This is an easy one. New works by Charles Dickens published. Less or more than Manchester Derby FA Cup finals since 1902?
You say it's an easy one, but now it feels like a trick question. Less.
There have been less because he died in 1870.
I thought it was going to. I thought like you get posthumous works published, don't you? That sort of get ascribed to the original writer. I wasn't sure if somebody might have rifled through one of his old desks and found some manuscripts or something.
True. Yeah, Muppet Christmas Carol.
That's one anyway, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Cheech, over to you for the final question. Question number 5. Different recipes used by Coca-Cola for their original Coke only. Have there been more or less since 1902?
More.
There's been less.
Oh, wow.
They changed to New Coke in 1985, but then had a really bad reaction and changed back again.
Well, that's annoying.
There you go. So I've forgotten the final score already, but there we go. It's a good bit of fun.
I'll be thinking of JFK all day. That was quite a big one, wasn't it? that I forgot about that.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Okay, so actually talking about the football now. Richard, it feels like De Bruyne and Foden and the way that they, especially the way they performed against Brighton, it feels like they're really kind of developing into this end of season mode. De Bruyne obviously back from injury. Foden he's just had a stellar season. How much for you has he developed this year?
Oh, it's enormous. I think... I feel like this was always sort of in the post because I remember we spoke at the end of season show last year about like what are you looking forward to in the following year, and I think we'd sort of started to see that maybe Foden would be stepping up, and we might start to see De Bruyne playing a bit less. And obviously that sort of manifested through quite a serious injury this year, a long-term injury. But obviously De Bruyne retains his quality as well. So I think to see both of them in this kind of end of season form is fantastic. But Foden's he's a bit of a different animal really this year. You think back to last year when, I think it'd be fair to say, his worst season since he broke through, you know, comparative to expectation. It's impossible to imagine now, had we got to the Champions League final, it's sort of impossible to imagine that Foden wouldn't be starting that. And you think back to last year, he came on when De Bruyne got injured, didn't he? And he's like he's another player that we've now got who you can rely on in big moments. You know, you look at games that we've had this year where we've been losing or drawing, and he's stepped up and scored the next goal. Or there's a sense that, you know, if he scores early, then he's probably going to score again. Or if he gets that second, you start to think, God, he might get another hat trick. It just always feels like you're more surprised if he has an ineffective game or an underwhelming performance than if he has a great one. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic to have another player like that. And, you know, it always, I suppose, resonates a bit more when it's Foden, because he's come through the academy and City fan and all that. But you're just looking at a player who is going to be this influential for years and years to come, you would think, and he's making that progression into a central role. He's openly speaking about wanting to play there and wanting that to be his position. And it doesn't really feel like there's going to be a transition period between sort of De Bruyne stepping down from his incredibly influential position to Foden sort of assuming that position. And by the way, if De Bruyne is going to start, you're going to start throwing in diving headers into the top corner in an end of season running.
For everyone, yeah.
Yeah, it's like new mode unlocked for De Bruyne as well. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Chich, just looking at them both in the middle against Brighton especially, like, Rich is right there, isn't he, in that there's no kind of handing of the baton here. They're doing the job together at this stage as well now. And it's just another kind of string to City's bow. They can have one of them in there doing it. They can have both of them in there doing it. You just don't really know what City are going to do. And that is so much to City's advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think, Foden's so effective out wide as well. I know that's the goal, I think, is to play centrally, but yeah, he can kind of do it from anywhere on the pitch. I think there's still so much more to come from him. Like, I just think he's always had an eye for goal, hasn't he? And I think that's really started to come to fruition this season. He's scoring a lot of goals, but I think those numbers can keep going up. I just think he'll keep getting better. I don't think he's not close to his peak yet, which is scary, really, when you consider how good he is and how influential he's become this season as well. But yeah, it's just, I've worried about De Bruyne at times, but it's just there's he's still so good, isn't he? Mm. Obviously, his body's maybe not quite as. It's starting to break down a little bit more. Like, he does have more injuries now, doesn't he? But yeah, he's just still so good. And that was, did it come off his head or off his, I think it, I don't know if he scores that goal without his current haircut. I think off the quiff.
Yeah, his old haircut though would that not have got underneath the ball more, maybe?
Well, possibly. I actually scored a similar but much worse goal at Seven-a-Side the other week. I got down too low for it, so it kind of bounced off the top of my forehead, skimmed off, you know, the netting, the roof.
Keeps the ball in play in the court. Yeah.
So it looped up, skimmed off that netting, and kind of lobbed the goalie on his own goal line. Not his fault, really.
It sounds like his fault, really. If the number of places I've been to where, like, the ball hits the netting at the top, it kills any sort of power in any sort of shot. So, like, I think maybe the keeper should have had it.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see De Bruyne do that anyway.
yeah. 50th and 51st Premier League goals for Foden. More for City than Cantona got for United, by the way. It's just like he's got the lot, hasn't he, Richard?
Yeah, he really has. I don't really know what to add to what Cheech said there. Like, you look at his goals and I do think you have that sense that his numbers could go up. There's no reason why in this City team playing centrally, why he couldn't be across, you know, in a season where City go deep in all competitions, why he couldn't be getting even towards that sort of 30 goals. I think looking at what he's got this season, that to me feels quite realistic. And then like his trophy record, and obviously it isn't all on him, but I mean, his trophy record almost defies belief. There's that stat every time we win a trophy that it's like he averages a trophy something like somewhere around every 15 games, which is, it's absolutely nuts. Like, it doesn't feel like that should be something that's possible for a professional footballer. I think he's got, and he's openly said this, like he's got a real shot at being the most decorated, certainly English player of all time. And like all of these things are, not that he looks like he needs it, but just like things to keep him motivated as well. Like he's fully in that. He's grown up in a City team where success on its own isn't enough. It's like you've got to keep going and you've got to do it again and again and again. And he's been in that since he was 16, 17. And I think it just shows, like, he's, like I say, if last season wasn't his best, he's bounced back with his best. And I think it's a real credit to him. And it's a credit to everybody that's worked with him and kept his feet on the ground, given how hyped he's been for a young age. And he's the standard, isn't he? He's the standard bearer for any young player at City. His attitude, I think, is to it all is fantastic. He seems very grounded when I think you could forgive him for maybe not always being given how quickly he burst onto the scene. He's just a fantastic player, a likeable lad, and it's really encouraging to think, like, even if this was his peak and he maintained it for a few years, that would be incredible. But it's probably not. He's definitely got more to offer, and that's just so exciting.
Yeah. Just on De Bruyne's header as well, Cheech, before we move on. There's only one player who took more Premier League games to score their first header than De Bruyne. Do you know who that is?
I do, actually, because I read the notes. But,
oh, fair enough, yeah.
No, Thierry Henry?
It is Thierry Henry,
So, well, no, I say I was surprised, but I can't imagine him scoring a header.
Yeah, he only scored one goal, Henry, didn't he? And that was open his body up, bend it into the far corner on his right foot.
Yeah.
Literally the only goal he ever scored, yeah.
Four times a season.
Yeah. What did you think of how City set up, Cheech, to be able to get De Bruyne and Foden in there? Because obviously Walker providing the width on the right-hand side has been something that has had criticism this season. But again, another stat there. He got himself two assists for the first time in a Premier League game. He was doing all right down the right flank, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's the first time I can think... I can't remember in recent, like maybe for two or three seasons, Walker being as effective going forward. That's not really been what he's brought to the team in recent years, I don't think. I think it's more like what we saw from him against Madrid. But he was really good. He rolled back the years a little bit, I think, because the pass for the first was fantastic.
Absolutely mulled the keeper as well for the last goal.
Yeah, I was going to say the play for the last goal up until the heavy touch and almost killing the goalkeeper was really good, really effective. Yeah, he was good. They just look solid as well, generally speaking. I think they did get away with at least one at the back. But you can't, I mean, a clean sheet with maybe... It wasn't maybe a lineup that would give... If you were feeling nervous, that back four might not make you feel better before the game's played, which I think is unfair because I think Ake and Akanji especially are both unbelievably reliable now. And I actually think Akanji's done the same thing that he did last season, where it takes him a bit of time, doesn't it, to find the rhythm, but he's been pretty flawless for a couple of months, I think. I can't really... He's been one of our better players, I think, for a while now.
Yeah. Fantastic.
He just kind of goes about it quietly, doesn't he? But
yeah. And the other player that Cheech didn't mention there, Richard, was Gvardiol. And I mean, obviously offers less kind of bursts forward than Walker does because he doesn't have the same sort of pace. But again, quietly over the last few weeks, he's really started to settle in at left back.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm fine with the not offering necessarily as much bursting forward to focus on his sort of defensive solidity. I think a lot of it comes in, a lot of his improvement to me is like I would broadly call it an improvement in his decision making. I think there's been a few times in the early part of the season where if he sort of starts the game with like a sloppy pass or two, it seems like it sort of carries on and sort of follows him around for the game. And I think there were definitely some occasions where very early on where he was maybe felt like he was sometimes putting City in a little bit of trouble, and those moments catch the eye more than what might have been for the rest of time, like the rest of the match, quite well rounded or, you know, under the radar competent performance. And so I think that decision making has improved, and there's far, far less of that sort of sloppiness, which, you know, it's almost boring to say now. We know that players take a while to settle in at City. It's far rarer for a player to come in and be brilliant in the first season than it is for a player to actually take a season to bed in and have a great second season. So that he's finding his feet at a really crucial time in the season is extremely encouraging.
Quite helpful as well, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And he's clearly a talented player. You know, City scouting is generally very, very good. So for them to pursue him and pay the kind of fee that they did anyway, I've like that alone, it's a very unscientific opinion, but that alone has always been enough to tell me that we've probably got a very good player in the making. But to actually start to see that bear out in really important games at the business end of the season is, again, it's great. I've been really impressed by him, and he's becoming eye-catching for the right reasons now. I think it's really noticeably strong performances.
Yeah. Let's finish with a quick look at, I'm going to call this bit getting away with it because it feels like City have done that this week. We'll start at Wembley, Richard. Grealish handball could have been given.
Yeah, it should have been. I thought I couldn't believe that it wasn't given. I couldn't believe, I wasn't at the game, I watched it on TV. I could not believe that the commentators were not fully, you know, that there was any debate about it. He sticks his arm out, his arm moves down to the ball, and it diverts it. So I'm very happy it wasn't given. And obviously we have previous with Grealish having dodgy handballs given against him at Wembley. So if that sort of balances that out a little bit, then I'm fine with it. But it was, I don't really understand how you watch that again and
can I,
the decision not to give a penalty.
Can I tell you why I think they've come to that decision? Because one of the things that they take into account this season is whether a player is trying to make their body smaller, so trying to make the silhouette smaller, and it catches Grealish's arm as he's bringing his arm towards his body. So he's trying to get his arm out of the way and towards his body. So that's what I think. That's the mitigating circumstances they're giving him.
Okay, well I'll accept that that explains it. I think
it's still a penalty, though, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose we're at a point with handball where it's constantly like, you know, if you try and knock a dent out of your car by putting another one in it, and actually you just end up with two dents. Like everything that they do with,
you've seen my handball driving, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. But we're in a mutually assured destruction position again here, so we'll not talk about that again because you've been in the car for my most ludicrous driving moment of all time.
Excellent. I'll leave the listeners to wonder.
Yeah, it feels like it's somewhat against the spirit of the law to not give a handball for the way that Grealish's arm impeded that play for Chelsea. Not least that they didn't even give a corner. It was just bizarre. But like I say, I'm more than happy to take that.
Yeah, it's really funny that the video can look at that and go, look for a penalty, not find a penalty, and have to stick with the on-field decision, which was that it didn't touch him at all.
Yeah, wild.
There we are. Cheech, then Brighton wanted a handball with Ake. That I don't really think they've got much of a case with because Ake's hand was in front of his body. So if it hadn't hit his hand, it would have hit his body and still gone out for a corner anyway. But Rodri pulling back one of their players, Gvardiol tripping one up, were they a bit lucky?
The Gvardiol one looks, yeah, from every angle, the Gvardiol one looks bad. I mean, it was clumsy, obviously, but I you'd have no complaints if that was given, I don't think. The Rodri one was a bit more marginal, I think. But yeah, I do think the Gvardiol one at least probably should have been a penalty.
Yeah, and Foden's free kick was very much a, I've slipped here.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, what can you do with that? We were lucky to get that one. You know, I mean, maybe some players would say something I don't know. I doubt it.
I don't think he'd have known, you know. I think, like, because he got...
It happens so quick.
Yeah, it happens so quick. And I think there's... I always think of one. This is a City history one to be thinking of. But I always think of one where Darren Huckabee was... or thought he'd been tripped at Preston North End. And Ayo Berkovic got sent off arguing with the referee about this. And the referee was Mike Dean. And what had happened was running through, Huckabee had clipped his own heels and fallen over. So he was adamant that he'd been tripped up, because he had been tripped up as far as he was aware, but it was himself that had done it, so it wasn't a foul. So I think that's what's happened with Foden there. I think he's slipped. He had the contact a couple of paces earlier. He slipped, and like in the moment, you feel like that's like he just feels it's a foul, and he's gone through. I don't think he's trying to win anything. I don't think he's trying to cheat anybody. He's just slipped.
Yeah, it's just. I mean, it's just one of those things. There's I mean, I don't envy referees, nor would I defend them, because I don't think they're very good. But like, it's a no-win situation at the moment, isn't it? Whatever the outcome on any number of decisions at any game. So, but it's just one of those things. I don't think, you know, I think it's just, unfortunately, the levels aren't quite as high as they need to be at the minute. Probably did get away with a few of them. But I don't think it would have made a difference. I don't think the outcome would have been any different for the game.
Yeah. Well, on to a game now where we're playing a team that has had one or two grievances with referees lately. We're going to start by getting a view from Matt Davis from the Forest Focus podcast. I started by asking how he's feeling about the fight for survival.
We were in this position last season, and we had more of a kind of Everton spirit about us that we saw last night when they beat Liverpool, which I'm sure you're delighted about. And we kind of feel like we haven't got it this season, which is making us worried. I think the only way we'll stay up at the moment is if either we find some form, or more likely we rely on Luton and Burnley not winning, well, I can say, any games potentially. I mean, I still think we only need one more win and a draw, and we do have the fixtures to do it. But on this specific game, I'm not feeling too optimistic. Just given the quality of City, it just feels like such an uphill task this time, unfortunately.
Yeah, and in terms of survival, I was just looking at your fixtures. Going away to Sheffield United and going away to Burnley on the last day. There's a Chelsea game wedged in at home between them. I mean, I guess you'd rather have them at home, but in terms of teams that you're going to play against to try and stay up, those around you are kind of ideal, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. They are. We have been poor away, but like you say, if you're going to want to play anyone, it's Sheffield United, really. So we're fortunate that we've got them, and you kind of get the feeling that if we can't go there and get a result, we probably deserve to go down, without trying to be too down on them. But their home record is so bad in terms of goals conceded. So that's the one we're kind of looking at. Chelsea is such a flaky team. Like, they've given, I'm sure they gave City a really good game. And, you know, they were playing well, and they lose 5-0 to Arsenal as soon as they lose a couple of quality players in Palmer and Silva. And Burnley, if they don't pick up form in the next three games, which are tricky on paper, then I think we'll be all right. I think the worry for us as Forest fans is if we have to go there on the last day needing something, can we do it? We're not so sure, because they haven't played at all well at home, away from home, and the home form that we saw last season's kind of disappeared. So it would be too terrifying that last game, but hopefully we can get 4 points in the next three games that would probably see us safe.
Yeah, how's it been on the pitch at the moment? It looked, I mean, refereeing aside against Everton, yeah. it looked quite frustrating, really.
Yeah, it's been a bit up and down. We were chipping away, getting points and playing fairly well. We probably could have beaten Crystal Palace at home. We should have beaten Wolves at home. We did beat Fulham at home. So there are positives there. Spurs, we had a really good spell in the game, but then kind of rolled over second half as soon as they went 3-1 up. And then the Everton game has been so frustrating. I mean, obviously you mentioned VAR, and that's really... put Forest in the footballing headlines more than they have been since they won the European Cups, I think. But from a football point of view, we didn't play overly well in that game, and VAR glossed over a few things. But then if we do get the at least two penalties that we should have had, then we perhaps get something from that game, and it turns the tide. So there was so much frustration from the weekend that hopefully we can take a little bit out on Man City, but that's going to be very difficult, to say the least.
Yeah. What do you make of the off the pitch stuff with the statement and stuff like that? Just, is there a sense of like it could be something for everybody to get behind and fight together with, or is it an unnecessary distraction?
A bit of both, I think. The first statement, I straight on the whistle, I really hated. I know people are saying within the Forest fan base they didn't allege corruption, but it's certainly intimated, and I didn't like that at all. Mm. The second and third ones asking for the audio, I don't have a problem with. I think there should be more transparency in the game. And the third one, they're trying to put the pin back in the grenade a little bit, saying it's not about questioning integrity, it's about the wider interpretations of VAR. And I do agree with that. I think VAR is really just destroying the game to me. We saw with Wolves last night another really duff decision from Stuart Atwell and his colleagues. So, I do have sympathy with Forest's position. Obviously, we've had so much bad luck with VAR this season. So many teams have that I think it could be a rallying cause for football. I think it needs addressing in the summer. But on the wider point, it can't be a distraction for Forest, because they have to save themselves on the pitch, and then the wider game can look after itself thereafter.
Yeah, we talk about this game as well, and your nerves going into it. How do you think Nuno will approach it? Because just looking at Forest's form, it's two wins since the start of 2024. How's he been playing recently? What's the style been like?
That's a good question. There was a style when he came in. We were a counter-attacking team. We played with a lot less fear than we did under Steve Cooper. And then it's felt like we've gradually regressed. We went to places like Brighton, who are obviously a good team. They just lost 4-0 to Roma, and we played ultra-defensive and really ceded the game to them. And we slipped back into that until we played Fulham and went back on the front foot. I think one of the big problems is we're 34 games into the season and still don't know our best 11. The centre-back pairing changes all the time. It changed again at the weekend. Central midfield pairing changes too often, and that changed again at the weekend. There is a core of a decent keeper, decent fullbacks, and a decent front four. But even then, he went away from that and started bringing in Divock Origi, who's done nothing. And now he's gone back to that front four with Anthony Elanga when he's fit. So I think I don't think there's a consistent pattern of play. You don't know what you're going to get from the team. And Nuno's got to solve that. And if he can't solve it this season, and we do stay up, he's got to solve it next season if he's still in a job.
Yeah. What do you think he'll do at the weekend? How do you think he'll approach it with City? Will it be another one of those everybody behind the ball, try and keep it tight scenarios like you talked about with Brighton?
I think so. We played Liverpool at home and we were really good, actually. We lost that game really controversially, again, with a poor refereeing decision. I don't know if you recall, where Paul Tierney gifted Liverpool the ball when a drop ball when it should have been ours, and we still had a lot of time to deal with it defensively. Don't get me wrong, but that we did play really well in that game, and we sat in and we packed the midfield, played very narrow. We did it against Arsenal last season as well under Steve Cooper when we won, and I'm kind of hoping that's how we play and just try and deny space centrally for players like De Bruyne, Foden if he drifts inside. I don't know who's going to play up front, obviously, with Haaland and Alvarez with the fitness issues. But we have to try and deny space, I think, and we'll do that. And then we do have pace on the counter-attack in Elanga, Hudson-Odoi, Gibbs-White. Chris Wood's in really good form, and he scores against you guys last season. And one thing I always think about City whenever I see them is that they always look like they'll give you a chance, even if they dominate the game. And if you can get that one shot on target that goes in the back of the net, which I've seen happen this season, then you do have an opportunity, but obviously they're so good. If we just sit in and camp 10 players across the 18-yard box, we're gonna lose. If we can deny space centrally in blocks of blocks of two, I guess, then I think we might have a chance. And I think that Nuno's going to play defensively and look to use pace on the counter-attack. And hopefully that gives us that one opportunity to maybe nick a 1-1 draw again like we did last season or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to mention last season's game, because obviously that one, it still lives in the memories of a lot of City fans, just on the basis of that. That's kind of the time when everything started to click for City just after that result. Are there any lessons you can take from that one in how to approach it? Because from my memory, it's like City should have had that game dead and buried, didn't do it. And then, Forest punished them on the break at the end.
Yeah, I guess that's the similar way of that we need to approach it again. I mean, I recall that game. As you say, you really should have won. I think Haaland missed a real sitter, which was out of character for him last season. But we hung in there, played very narrow, played four central midfielders, two in front of each other, and that did work. And we had that one chance, which was a really good move. I think it was our goal of the season. Every outfield player touched the ball, and then we crossed it into the back post for Wood to score. And it was completely out of character with the whole game. We barely had a kick. So I think that's probably the way to hang in there, try and nick something. And then if any of your listeners were at the game as well, like the atmosphere after we scored those last 10 minutes was as good as I can remember. And if the crowd can bring that noise, which we were kind of famed for last season, but it's gone away a bit this season, and I think that can only help us as well. But we remember that game so well because it was a real highlight. And if we can do anything like that again this season in terms of performance, even if we lose the game, I think we can take something from it.
Yeah. In terms of players at the moment, who's likely to cause City trouble if they're on the form for this game?
I think we always look to Morgan Gibbs-White. He was so good against Fulham. We scored three goals in the first half and he scored one and created certainly one and possibly the other one as well. He plays in that number 10 pocket and he can cause problems and he can wind players up. Obviously, Rodri got sent off in the reverse fixture for tussling with Morgan. So he's the main one. Chris Wood is having a great season. He has missed a couple of chances in the last two games, but he's been really clinical. And then probably Anthony Elanga, because if he plays on the right, your left-back position is always a bit weird. Vardiol seems a bit out of position there. So maybe you can exploit that, because I don't think if Kyle Walker plays, I think he'll deal with Hudson-Odoi quite well. So, yeah, probably Elanga and Gibbs-White are the ones we'll be looking to who might be able to cause you a few issues.
Yeah, and obviously we need to touch on kind of like the wider issues around Forest as well, with just looking at the league table and, you know, Everton getting a little bit away from you, and they've had the points deductions, you've had a points deduction, City have got the Premier League charges that they're still waiting to hear about. What do you make of the way that the points deductions have been handled this season? Are you hopeful that you might get any back on appeal, or are you appealing them? What's the situation?
We had our appeal, I think it was yesterday as we record this, and we should get our results, our verdict from that around May the 6th, so a couple of weeks. We might possibly get a point back, I'm not sure. Everton only got 2 points in their last deduction, and it's sort of a similar framework to that in terms of what we were charged with. So I really don't know, and that's one of the big issues, David, that there's no clarity around the process at all. There's no transparency about, you know, you breach by X figure, you're going to get X points deducted. A lot of football fans, as I'm sure you're aware, are very annoyed that City's case is dragging on and on and on. And I can understand why, because it's so complex with so many charges, but it's not a good look for the Premier League. The whole thing's a bit of a mess. It's a 10-year-old system that's dated massively by inflation. It needs overhauling. The proposed changes are even worse, I think, and actually favour the bigger clubs with the bigger stadiums and the bigger commercial income. So it won't be a level playing field at all. I really hate PSR. Clubs who've got owners who want to invest more and can do it sustainably should be allowed to. And, you know, that includes City, Newcastle, Aston Villa, Forest, although we're nowhere near that level. But I think it's an awful system that doesn't do what it was intended to originally, and it needs a massive overhaul.
Yeah, is there any kind of feeling about the relegation battle this season, given the points deductions? Is there any feeling that you maybe should be safer than you are? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, definitely. If we'd not had the 4 points, I think we'd be safe already. And obviously, we did break the rules as they stand. So there's frustration that we got ourselves in this position by hook or by crook. And there's lots of arguments around, you know, how we got there in terms of spending to survive. Otherwise, we might have been another Sheffield United. But it is an annoyance, certainly, that we would be safe, but effectively without the points deduction. And we've had so many games where we kind of feel that as a team, we have better players in our league position, but we let ourselves down consistently. We've got the worst record defending set pieces in the league by far. We've conceded over 20 goals from set pieces. We concede really sloppy goals out of nowhere when we're dictating games. We had, games against Luton. We were 2-0 up with 15 minutes to go and 1-0 up with 1 minute to go in the reverse fixture and didn't win either game. So it's been the most frustrating season. And I think a lot of Forest fans just wish it was over. There's even a growing sentiment that even if we go down, at least, we'll be free. The Premier League lost its luster, certainly, I would say, for a lot of fans. So we're just looking for this season to be over and then have a big reset in the summer, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk about this weekend's game then. How do you think it's going to go? We've got a charity bet coming up a bit later on in the show. Let's have a prediction for the game and a new score prediction for that, if that's all right.
Well, if it's charity, I have to give a real prediction, don't I? I can't do the normal fan thing of coming on saying we're going to win, which I don't think we will. I think City will win comfortably. You'll completely dictate the game from start to finish. You'll give us a chance and we might nick a goal. Just the longer it stays level, the more chance we have. But we do have a habit of starting games really slowly, and that costing us. It happened again at the weekend. So if I was to give a score prediction, I would say 3-1 City.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was Matt Davis from Forest Focus. Cheech, this was a really tricky one last season, largely down to City not taking the chances. So, come on, tell me why this season will be different.
Well, we're in that, as we've spoken about, we're definitely in that end of season mode at the minute. And Forest have been kind of imploding, exploding, just kind of ploding all over the place this season, haven't they? Like, I think it's one of those things. I've because for some reason, so many Forest fans work in football media. Just kind of in my weekly kind of podcast consumption, you get a lot of Forest viewpoints, don't you? Generally speaking, so. I've been aware of a lot of the issues they've had this season, and it probably was, or it could have been, the right time to get rid of Steve Cooper if they'd brought in someone that wasn't Nuno. but unfortunately, they've got rid of the kind of one man who, against all odds, has managed to galvanise and unite a bit of a basket case of a club, to put it mildly. So kind of getting rid of him and replacing him with someone who's just gone from bad to worst, I think, since maybe looking a bit promising at Wolves, it's just been disastrous. And I think the cracks that Cooper previously papered over have just been exposed. And I think they are looking a little bit precarious at the moment, I think, with the way Burnley are playing as well. So, yeah, if we get a Burnley fan in VAR as well, I think we're on to a winner.
Yeah. Richard, the issue here that I've got, and I don't know if this is just a traditional City fan, fearing the worst about every situation, but a couple of things. First off, like, take that feeling of the Brighton crowd on Thursday night, of just how they were so kind of unified against the referee. Forest will be like that from kickoff because of what they've had recently. So they'll already be up for the game in that sense. In terms of a dressing room sort of thing, you look at like how the Premier League charges galvanised City last season. The idea that the entire league wants Forest relegated is something that Nuno can just kind of go, listen, we have to fight against everybody here. Go out there and fight it. And suddenly you've got a team that's really motivated.
Yeah, but I feel like Forest I mean, there's loads of reasons to be concerned at an end of season game because pressure builds up, and you know, Forest have got their own things to play for. But I think in terms of like being galvanised, I think we're past that with Forest. Like, I think we're already at a point where it's not happened in relation to like points deductions. You know, you look at Everton's form after their first points deduction was absolutely fantastic. They looked like a different team, and people were talking about, you know, without the points deduction, they'd be sort of a mid-table team, or like there was no sort of concern for them almost because they hit such good form before it sort of then fell off a cliff again. I think Forest are past that for it to feel like a concern to me at this point. I understand, obviously, after the sort of being the headline news for the last week, it could sort of reinvigorate any feeling of that. But we've already not seen it. I've already seen it not work once. So I think, like, yeah, the crowd will be up. You would expect that. It's a huge game. They will certainly go into it as massive, massive underdogs. So there's, yeah, I think that stuff is like, City will already be prepared for that. They manage that kind of thing quite regularly anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it feeds into what we already know City are so good at the end of the season. So it doesn't overly worry me, and please don't take that as me saying that I'm not worried about the game. I think you'll be nervous before any game at this stage of the season when you're in a title race.
Yeah. But
the external factors don't really worry me, to be honest, at this point.
How about the basket case element? Because like at the best of times, basket cases are dangerous. But when the season is in the moment that it's in now, where it's kind of win or bust right now, like there's a little bit more danger there, maybe.
Yeah, and we saw it for Everton are a great example of that again midweek. To give such a strong performance for a team that have been fighting relegation all season, to do that against a title rival, again, excluding all factors about that being a derby or motivations for wanting to beat Liverpool, right? Teams can step up, and that sort of that absolute need to win, teams often find something different at this stage of the season. However, there remains a reason why they are fighting relegation and why City are fighting for a title. And so you have to take confidence from the fact that time and time again, City manage these kind of situations, and you have to trust that quality will win out. And if it doesn't, then it's not going to be down to, you know, it won't be down to pressure. It won't be down to Forest being a better team. It's like things can just happen. And I don't lose any sleep over what Forest will do. It's more about if you need it, the City get the breaks that day, or you know, can they get an early goal, or do nerves creep in? But my concern isn't what Forest can do, it's the City shoot themselves in the foot, and again, they don't often do that, do they, at this stage?
Yeah. In terms of selection, Cheech, there's now, as you've mentioned before, there's no need to balance the squad for Premier League and Champions League duties. Does that make the selection a bit easier for Guardiola? Firstly, Sunday's still a fairly quick turnaround, especially getting back from Brighton quite late on Friday and quite early on Friday, but late on Thursday, if you know what I mean. It kind of means that he probably should make some changes, but at the same time, he's got a week off after this game till Wolves.
I think there'll be some rotation because I think there's players who need minutes still for the running. So if Stones is available, I mean, if Stones is available, I would always play him. But yeah, I think if Stones is available, it'd be good to see him play. I'd like to see Grealish play. I think he's been mostly unfortunate this season because I think his form gets spoken about so much. I don't think form's really been an issue this season, has it? I think it's been fitness,
you know, and rhythm. Yeah,
yeah. Which that's down to luck a lot of the time. But he's looked good, I think, since he's returned recently and stayed fit. So I'd like to see him play.
Would you play him and Doku on the basis that they both missed out from the start against Brighton?
I'd like to see it because I'd like to see Doku on the right because that's, as far as I'm aware, that's his natural position, his right wing. But everywhere he's been in his career, he's eventually been shifted. I don't know if that's just because that's the kind of that's been in vogue for a while, isn't it? Kind of cutting in that way. But I'd like to see him on the right. I just think I always look better with Grealish in the side. I don't think that's a coincidence. I know he doesn't get I know it's easy to focus on his numbers, sorry, but just we always look a better team when he's playing. So I'd like to see him come in. As I said, I'd like to see Stones come in. I don't know what I think. Haaland, I think Haaland is still out, as far as I'm aware. Although I don't know if I'm confusing that with the press conference before Brighton.
Yeah, there's been. I don't even know as well if they'll do a press conference ahead of this one. I think they probably did it after the Brighton game and embargoed it until weekend. So I don't know if we'll know anything. But it's an interesting one because I suspect he wouldn't be fit. But if he is, like, do you have a question there?
Yes. Well, I mean I don't know what the question is, but I know that the answer is it's Alvarez or Haaland, I think.
Both.
Yeah, and maybe one day. I'm really curious to see what we do in the summer and how we set up next summer, because I think there's going to be an evolution, because I don't think we've quite figured out a formation for the group of players that we've got. I think it's fine. I mean, we obviously have quite fluid formations most of the time anyway. But yeah, I'd be curious to see kind of how that develops next season, definitely, with the signings that we're looking to make this summer.
Yeah. How about Foden and De Bruyne, Richard? Because obviously both played a big part of the game at Brighton. Foden's young and energetic and doesn't have anything wrong with his body, whereas De Bruyne is old and has had injuries. So does he need some time out?
I would favour playing both at this stage, unless, you know, it's a really boring point to say, but unless those people who are party to exactly how De Bruyne is feeling, if they need to make a decision, you know, if there's a judgment that he's not ready to start the game and, you know, he's better to have as an option to come on if we need to change anything, then I would always... like on experience at this stage and again showing midweek that quality is there and he's stepping up for the big games, like he's such a man for the big moments that I'd be very, very wary of leaving him out if we don't absolutely have to.
Yeah. Kind of in the mode now of the run of the real run starts here, so how are you both feeling? Richard, I'll start with you.
Fine. I think when the match comes, I will feel nervous, and the longer we go without being in the lead in any given game coming up, those nerves will obviously start to build, and you look to sort of the other fixtures and hope Arsenal are going to drop points. But I feel relatively relaxed, which is probably a symptom of or a consequence, I should say, of what happened last season, and it's. Like my hope for this year has always been first and foremost to win the Premier League and get that four in a row. And I would be gutted if we didn't do that. But also, I'm quite relaxed in the sense that if we were to not win it, Arsenal are a far less offensive team to lose it to than Liverpool and the Klopp stuff that would have absolutely driven me mad. Whereas Arsenal are, I'm relatively indifferent to as a club. So I'm all right. And reasonably relaxed with City are in a good position and it's in their hands, which is all you can ask for at this stage.
Yeah, Cheech, you were relaxed before the Brighton game. You'll be positively laid back ahead of this one now, will you?
Yeah, no, I am still relaxed. The only caveat is I think I worry about the influence that Tottenham could have on the run-in, because I think the North London derby is, in my mind, maybe the last time that Arsenal might drop points this season. I think if Arsenal win that game, I think they'll win their remaining games, which I'm fairly confident we can do that. But again, adding the Tottenham caveat.
Such a spectacular game, isn't it? Yeah.
I know. It's very reminiscent of the one at Goodison, isn't it, in 2014, which was just such a hilarious game because they went and won up as well, didn't they? And just... there was kind of a groan around the stadium. But yeah, no, I am relaxed. I know it's something that you've preached in the past, David, especially when we were up against Liverpool with how kind of annoying those run-ins are. But I try not to watch Arsenal's games for the rest of the season now. Like I don't need that's adding extra stress, I think, if you try and kind of take in every part of the running.
Genuinely, if you can, if Arsenal are playing and you've got a spare afternoon, genuinely go to the cinema and do something else, busy your time elsewhere, because the only thing that can happen is the only thing that will happen is if you watch the game and you get your hopes dashed, you've spent an hour willing something to happen that isn't going to happen. At least if you've been productive elsewhere, then you can check your phone and go, oh, well, I knew that was going to happen anyway.
Exactly. So, as I said, I think Tottenham could do something. Big Ange, I've got a lot of faith in him. But if that doesn't happen, I think that's it for the rest of the season. But we've done it before quite a few times, haven't we? So we've got to be confident that we can do it again.
I'm just imagining Postecoglou's face on those posters that says "The City Football Group needs you." stick them up around the new White Hart Lane. That'll do it.
As all the other potential successes kind of keep eventually falling away, such as Roberto Di Zerbi, I think in recent times, I quite fancy Postecoglou to maybe take over from Pep one day.
Yeah, well, his audition starts on Sunday, I guess, doesn't it, when they play Arsenal? Let's find out.
Big time.
Yeah. Charity bet time. We've raised £1,040 on this season's charity bet. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, and we have one game to predict this week. We heard from Matt that he's gone for a 3-1 City win. That's 10-1 and £100 if he's right. Richard, what are you having?
I am going to go 3-0 to City.
3-0 to City is 8-1 and £80. Cheech, go on, do us the business.
I went 4-0 City.
4-0 City is 14-1 and £140 if you're right. And the good news is podcast debutants have a habit of getting the right score on on their first prediction. So no pressure. There we go.
You should see my betting history on my own William Hill account.
It's not that good, is it? Then
I won't put this bet on. I want to give us a chance.
fine. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information about responsible gambling, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now, this week, we've had the news that FA Cup replays will be no more from the first round onwards of next season's competition. It means, barring an unprecedented sequence of relegations or any more changes to the competition's regulations or, you know, other things off the pitch going wrong, City have played their last FA Cup replay. This wouldn't be the Blue Moon podcast if we didn't spend some time looking at City's history of FA Cup replays with a hook like that. Here's Sam Rosbottom to talk you through it.
Manchester City have played a total of 69 FA Cup replays across 61 different ties, with 39 different opponents. Most of the time, a winner was found after one replay, but on 8 occasions, a second replay was needed. They've never been taken to a third. Aston Villa were the first team to need a rematch all the way back in January in the year 1900. The most recent was Huddersfield, some 117 years later.
Many teams in the Premier League in that moment is out, so we have another chance next Tuesday, in 2 weeks. We will play the replay for my first time in my life, and we're going to try to qualify.
What are your feelings about the notion that FA Cup ties should be completed on the day, even with extra time and penalties?
Don't ask me. I am new in your beautiful country. So you have to ask the brilliant brains of the decision, so not me. I adjust on the rules. The rules are replay, I'm going to play to replay.
That was Guardiola speaking after the 0-0 draw at the John Smith Stadium. City won the second game 5-1 at the Etihad. That's Guardiola's only cup replay in his entire managerial career, and that's probably because he takes every competition very seriously. He spoke this week about the change coming for next season.
To find the balance today in the world football is the most difficult thing. And I understand, and the clubs in the lower divisions can complain about that, because if we have a game here in Etihad Stadium and we cannot win, we have to go to a team with a conference one or League One. That game is so important for them. That's why I think was create that replays in the FA Cup. But with the schedule that we have, especially the teams like play European competitions and national teams, many players go to a national team, is much better.
Guardiola is one of 12 City managers who have faced only one FA Cup replay. The manager who played the most was Joe Mercer, racking up 9 of them between 1966 and 1969. His last replay was against Newcastle in the 4th round of the competition in the year that his side would win the cup. Mercer and his coach Malcolm Allison were interviewed at a celebratory dinner after winning the final.
I tell you what, Joe, what a wonderful spell you've had since you joined Manchester City.
Yes.
I mean, it's all happened.
Yes, it's amazing.
Second division championship, first division championship, now you've won the cup.
Yes, yes, really, it's like a fairy tale, isn't it?
Malcolm, clearly City, you know, first division champions last season, cup winners this time, have achieved a great deal. But watching the side, I'm inclined to agree with a remark that you once made, that you haven't found the bottom of this team yet.
No, it's one or two young players who not really don't really express themselves yet, but with the success they've had in the last 4 years, I think that they now can go and play against the best teams in Europe.
Yeah. I hate to remind you, but it's almost inevitable. You remember when you won the league championship, you said you'd show the cards of Europe how to play next year. Have you got any message for Europe this time, now you're in the Cup Winners' Cup?
I think we'll definitely get through the first round next year.
Thanks very much, Malcolm.
The final in 1969 was against Leicester. Over the years, the Foxes have taken City to a total of 5 FA Cup replays. That's more than any other team. It includes the run where City would next lift the trophy too. It was the 3rd round in 2011. Roberto Mancini was City boss, and the ex-City manager Sven-Goran Eriksson was in the opposite dugout.
It was very good to come back, and a lot of good memories, and but I shouldn't like to have gone there the second game of the FA Cup. I would have liked to have beaten them at home in Leicester, because I think we had the chance, but we didn't take it. So anyhow, in 2 games they were the better team and we lost, and now they have really a chance to win the FA Cup, and I hope they will.
Before Mancini, Kevin Keegan was the previous manager to have a replay against Leicester. After a 2-2 draw at Eastlands in 2004, City won 3-1 at the Walkers Stadium, in what was their first win in 15 games during a dreadful run of form. That set up a home tie with Tottenham in the 4th round. After another stalemate, City went to White Hart Lane and played out their most famous FA Cup replay ever.
Well, basically what it was 3-0 down, weren't we, at half-time, down to 10 men and no way back, so to speak.
That's John Macken. Despite the situation he's just outlined, he scored City's final goal as they came from behind to win 4-3.
We sneaked one or two goals and then the third one came and you think, right, can you go and do anything? I just remember the ball coming across and thinking, right, get your head on this, John, and see what happens. And just thankfully, it went in and, you know, there was no extra time to be played.
He told the podcast that they took that second half one goal at a time.
You're thinking to yourself, right, OK, just go out and try and have a little bit of pride, try and stop them scoring, you know, 6 or 7. And just try and keep it fairly respectable. And, you know, like I say, you get your first one, you think, right, OK, then hold on now, 3-1's not a bad result. And you get the second, you think, right, OK, you know, this is it. And you certainly when you get your third, you think, right, come on, man, your momentum's with you. You think, right, go on, push on, let's see what we can do. You've got to go out and you've got to try and perform and you've got to try and at least, you know, give the fans, you know, something to look back at and say, well, OK, then at least he had a go in the second half. Basically, you just go out and you just try and have a little bit of pride and you just try and give a half-decent performance and, you know, keep the score respectable. And unfortunately, we went out and we did a little bit more than that.
If that's a good memory of a replay with Tottenham, we should also mention a time when it didn't go City's way. We're going back to the final in 1981. It finished 1-1 after extra time at Wembley, and back in those days, that didn't mean penalties. It meant a replay. City lost that 3-2. Supporter Chris Wright picked it in his episode of The Games That Made Me.
Even though we lost the game, it was still an amazing game, and it was a huge improvement on the first game that happened on the Saturday. It must be bizarre for a young generation to think about doing an FA Cup final replay. Yeah. On a Thursday night. There also was a school night as well. So it was, you know, something, everything felt wrong about it. Well, looking back, everything feels wrong about it. But it was a really exciting game. And there were some wonderful goals in there, of which I think, you know, ours was the best one. I thought McKenzie's was easy to pick of the 5 goals.
On their way to the final, City had needed a replay against Everton in the quarterfinals. Everton are one of the 8 teams to take City to a second replay, although that was in a different season, back in the 1960s. The others to do it are Preston, Sheffield United, Halifax, Cardiff, Watford, Huddersfield, and most recently, Millwall. That last one was back in 1990. Second replays were scrapped in 1991, before it was decided that there would be no replays at all in the semi-finals and final from the year 2000. Then, in 2016, replays were removed from the quarter-final stage, and then they were axed from the fifth round in 2019. Next season's change means that City will probably never play an FA Cup replay again. It keeps their record in replays at 44 wins, 8 draws, and 17 defeats.
Hi, I'm John Macken, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was Sam Rosbottom looking at City's FA Cup replays. Any good memories of Cup replays? Richard, you must obviously, like me, think of the only FA Cup replay being that Spurs one. But I like your little story that you told on the Patreon show about the Villa replay. Or the game that took Villa to, City Villa to a replay in 2005?
Yeah, so I suppose, the memory being more of the, like you say, the game that took City to the replay when they'd been 1-0 down at Aston Villa and they get a corner in stoppage time. And I was watching at home on TV. And as they got the corner, I sort of jumped very literally to the edge of my seat and the TV remote was on the floor. And I jumped onto the TV remote and turn the TV off, cue the everybody in the front room shouting at me and sort of, you know, get it back on. And when I turned it on, Michael Richards was celebrating his last minute equaliser. So, yeah, not a memory of the game, something that I didn't get to witness. But we were very happy once we turned it on and did see that they'd scored. But I did very much regret having stood on the remote. But yeah, other FA Cup replays, how can it not be the Tottenham game that you think of first? It was incredible.
Yeah. Cheech, where were you for that one, the Spurs comeback?
Well, yeah, I've got a funny story for this, actually, because I was, when was it, 2004?
Yeah.
I was 13 for that game, and I was quite ill. So I was listening on GMR at the time, in bed with the curtains drawn, and was kind of drifting in and out of sleep. I was quite delirious. So in my delirium, for some reason, I thought that away goals was a factor in this game. So when Wright Phillips, I mean, obviously I was still like, what a comeback. But when Wright Phillips scored, I was like, that's it, we've done it. So when Macken actually did score and got the winner, I kind of viewed it. I thought Cheeseman was maybe being a bit over the top.
But yeah, they need two. Like, I don't know what's going on.
That's it. I just thought, well, that's the cherry on top, isn't it? But yeah, so I was very confused. And then the next day I was like, why did I don't know why I thought away goals had come into it.
Yeah, excellent.
My only other memory is kind of similar to Richard's. It's not, I don't remember the replay. I think we won quite comfortably, but it was the Notts County one with
Dzeko.
When Dzeko scored his first goal for City, yeah.
Yeah, that was, and Notts County had a chance to win it as well, right at the death after Dzeko had equalised, and Clive Tildesley sounded terribly disappointed on ITV's coverage. There we go. And just before we finish, while we've been recording, we've seen that the Premier League chief executive, Richard Masters, has said that the hearing into City's 115 charges will take place in the, quote, very near future. Richard, is that that must be quite welcome in many ways, because like whichever way it goes, you at least want an outcome soon.
Yeah, I think it is hard to escape the fact that for good reason, and the Forest fan in his preview alluded to it, like, it isn't great for the league to have this hanging over it whilst other teams are having their cases heard. And clearly 115 charges is very different to one or two charges. Like, obviously one of those is more likely to drag on than the other. But all the same, it isn't fantastic. It will be good to just know the outcome and then we can all just get on with our lives. It's boring hearing about it now. I think the wider footballing public, or maybe I'm just overcrediting Twitter users, but generally the outcome isn't actually going to change a lot of people's minds, whatever happens. So just from knowing sort of the lay of the land, really, it'll be good to be able to just sort of put it behind us at least officially. Like I say, it's not something that's ever going to leave the club either way, but it will be good to just know the outcome and hopefully not, you know, the near future is the very near future would be fantastic.
Yeah. All of that being said, Cheech, there is a very good chance that if City lose, they'll appeal. If the Premier League loses, they'll appeal.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It's by no means, I don't think the end is particularly near, unfortunately.
Yeah, but what is going to come to an end in the very near future is this week's Blue Moon podcast. There we go. How's that for an ending link? We'll be back next week to review the game with Forest and preview the match with Wolves. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks also to my guests, Richard Burns.
Thank you very much.
And Cheech.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming. Stay tuned for a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show. That's coming up shortly. See you next week.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
It was 3 days before my 16th birthday. It was just a real kick in the guts to go into the summer with. Matt Jackson, who quite frankly looks like he should be playing for the England Rugby Union team, similar to the way he booted the ball, it was like he was kicking for touch. If the net hadn't been there, it probably wouldn't have landed by now. But he was given about 9 yards space around him to just absolutely hammer it in. Beagrie, very similar, just smashed it in with nobody around him. Peter Beagrie doing his double somersault. I hated Beagrie at that time. Just like, talk about rubbing it in. It's like, oh, you're going to beat him again, are you? You can't just beat him once before you cross it. And then when he came to us,
I bet you loved it a few years later, though, didn't you?
I certainly did. Yeah, yeah. And then Hinchcliffe came back to haunt us.
Yeah.
No idea why we let him go. Maybe that's why he hates City so much these days, but he really was a thorn in our sides that day. And then you've got Preki, who was a bloody five-a-side player, scoring from 20-odd yards against us. He's probably never kicked the ball that far in his career. I mean, he sounds like a cheap Volkswagen, bloody Preki.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.